Session number 9552, Reel 14.
Mr. Basil Farrow, Reel 14. I wonder now if we can actually move on to the actual attack on Montebone on the first day of the song. Yeah. What instructions had you been given?
Well, as far as I was concerned personally, as a stretcher bearer, none. We had no instructions. I mean, we just knew what we'd got to do. What the men, the actual fighting man, what instructions he would have, there'd be corporals and sergeants. I don't recollect that they would give them any instructions except move forward to the front line, get on. We'd file along the communication trench. But I also, whether it was on this occasion, on the night of June the 30th and July the 1st, going up, I remember, and it did. I'm sure it was that night. There was a terrific big red moon, and it struck me as I can't explain. It was a peculiar feeling. We were going up anyway. Went up the communication trench.
This is on the 30th. You went up
on during the night of the 30th when we moved up into to take up our positions for the attack at 7:30 in the morning.
These positions, were they your usual positions in front of Carnoir, or were you elsewhere?
No, they weren't out. I don't think they were. In fact, I'm not. I would even say I'm not quite sure whether it was the actual front line, because we go over in waves. There's the front line men. Now, I don't. We might have been front line. And I honestly, at this moment of time, I cannot remember whether it was the actual front line or whether one of the trenches behind, because you go over in waves, the first line goes over and you immediately follow. I mean, you can't get all the army all in the front line trench. So I honestly couldn't say with any certainty don't remember. There were the traverses, same as the front line, but I don't remember whether it was our front line with which we were normally familiar. But anyhow, 7:30, we took up our positions.
Were you nervous before?
I was apprehensive. A soldier, the thing was that you had to be a fatalist, and you wondered whether you'd be alive at night. They used to sort of console each console each other. No, that's not the way. They often said, if it's got your name and address on it, it'll find you. So what's the use of worrying? So you've just got to go, and you hope for the best. Well, I do. Now you mentioned that, I was apprehensive. Of course, I wondered whether I was going to be killed, and accepted the fact that. The probability was, because with all the stuff that's flying around, and although when we were down there, that opened up when we mounted the parapet, machine gun, they'd had time as soon as our shelling stopped. The mine went up, and they knew we were coming. They had time to rush up from their dugouts. They'd practiced that probably, and man their machine gun posts. And they had machine guns, and they simply mowed us down. It was, as if you've read of the Battle of the Somme, it was between the 7:30 that we mounted and 7:30 in the evening, there were 59 to 60,000 casualties, that is, wounded, dead, and missing. That was the first day of the Somme. Anyhow, I do remember just before we were mounting, we were there in the trench, we got the ladders there ready. And there was a sergeant, and he got the DCM. And I saw him, he had a piece of earth, clay, and I saw him going like that.
rubbing it between his feet.
Yes. And I thought, I have a recollection, I don't know what my, now, I can't say with certainty whether it was, I thought he was frightened, or he was concerned, you know. I could see that he was anxious. Something to, he was nervy. Anyhow, and he was a DCM. So I was young and I was apprehensive, expecting to be killed. I mean, that's when, whether you're attacking or not, when you're in the front line, it can happen. And even if you're in reserve, the shell, I mean, shells are falling daily and hourly. And during a little strafe, they can, even when there's no attacks on, when you're in the front line trench, you can be killed from any minute of the day or night. So you get, accept that you could die any moment. The noise sometimes frightens you. There was one thing I was particularly frightened of, which I didn't encounter, but I knew of it. That was what we call, Germans call the Flammenwerfer, flamethrower. I was scared stiff of that. And a nasty wound that would make you suffer. Those are the fears of, I think those are the only fears of soldiers. Death or a blighty. That was his hope. Clean death or a blighty. I think so. That was mine. From my own. What I'd think now, whether I thought it at the time, I don't know. I can't remember. Anyhow, we went. 7:30, we mounted the parapet.
You used ladders to get out of the trenches?
Yes. You know, like duckboards, they're roughly made ladders. Scaling ladders. They just reach the top of the trench. They don't go beyond, and so you go up those and then scramble on the top. Well, up they went, and then we stretch of ours went over with them, and we were quickly very busy picking up the wounded, taking them to regimental aid posts. That's where the regimental aid quarters were. You've got your companies, and then the communication trench to the regimental HQ. The command post, and the regimental aid post would be there, and we'd take wounded there, and the day passed like that.
So when you got on you got up onto the parapet.
Yes.
You would immediately be busy, would you?
Yes.
You would get the first person who fell.
The first person who fell. But again, I remember. There were other wounded. It wasn't immediately, but as the day went on, the other regiments were going through and other wounded. And as you're going along with the stretcher, you'd hear faint call, stretcher bearer, wounded men. You'd go over, look on his shoulder. You're concerned with your own regiment. Sorry, chum, we're Yorks. I have a faint recollection of that. Because if you collected all and sundry back to your own regimental aid post, I mean, your medical officer had his hands full already with his own wounded. If you're going to take every wounded man back, in fact, you'd never get. They were strewn all over the shop like. It's hard to describe. Men all over on the floor, wounded. Some were walking, of course. Some could walk back. They were lucky. If you got it, although if you got it in the head, probably knock you unconscious for a while. But in the arm, or even in the body, or in a flesh wound, they could walk. But it was the battle wounded you picked up. And there were plenty of them. And my only recollection of that day is going backwards and forwards and picking up. And a hell of a noise, because the Jerrys opened up their fire, then, their artillery. And machine guns, rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat-a. The ordinary single shots from the fellows in the line, of the bullets whizzing past, like, I don't know if you've heard of it, on a rifle range, that's all the time, it's just like rain, but the machine guns, it's a rattle, and the effect is just like a scythe, just. And not only one, but the number of machine guns. And that was my only recollection of July the 1st. And except, I do remember a case. And I've read in the Yorks, he's referred to as a second lieutenant. And I'm sure it was a captain, if not a major. He was the CEO of A Company, of the Yorks. And how I come to be on my own, I have no idea. But I was on my own when I found him, badly wounded. I looked up and I spotted another chap of his company, A Company, stretcher bearer. Called him over and we got him out together. This is all that's transpired later. The chappie I called over, the officer, eventually, he died. Not with us. When he was evacuated, he was so badly wounded. He had time to recommend the man he knew and got him out. And he got the military medal, that chap did. Got the military medal. And I do believe, too, that he'd had time. I don't know if they died then or at the base, but he died of his wounds. And I did hear that the chap started receiving parcels from the officer's family. So the officer might have written home. That's only a vague recollection. But I do know this. That was one of the military medals that I missed, that somebody else got. But I know that later on, during that Somme offensive, not on July the 1st, because in the evening we were withdrawn. I do remember, I'm speaking now, there was a little bunch of us before we marched what was the left of the battalion. We didn't suffer too many casualties. We were very fortunate. On our left, they were mown down terrifically, but I've got the idea that we were extremely lucky. In fact, I think we were the only ones that took their objective that day.
So I want to ask just a couple more questions about what was happening on the day. How did they get through the British barbed wire? They cut channels through, had they?
It hadn't been cut entirely, so I gathered, but in our sector, I didn't find any difficulty. But so I gathered from others and from reports, and lots from what I've read since, that the wire hadn't been properly cut. But from my recollection, I didn't find much obstacle of going forward.
And you say we took the battalion took their objective in front of
the our division took the objective. And
did you actually get did your area of operations, how far forward did it go? Did you get right forward to
only as far as Montauban? As far as Montauban. And then we withdrew.
What I mean is, were you working throughout the whole area?
I was working just the straightforward in front of me and back. In front of me and back.
And you went right to the limits of the advance?
Yes.
What could you see of what was happening when you got to the German trench? What condition was it in?
Well,
after the bombardment?
Frankly, Now, to recollect, I would have to imagine what it would be like. That's all I can say, that it would be after the terrific bombardment, the trench wouldn't be in much of a state. But I honestly cannot visualise it now, at this moment. It's very vague. It is a long time ago.
You went backwards and forwards, carrying people. Were you tired at the end of the day?
Yes, obviously. But I must have been very fit. And what else? Is there anything particular there? You know, backwards and forwards. And then I remember later, it was still light. We were withdrawn, apparently. Other troops had gone through, occupied what had been captured. And we were going to be withdrawn. So we were in the actual attacking force. And the what was left of the battalion, when I say the remnants, wasn't too badly dealt with. I do remember in the trench, because we were in what was left of one of our trenches. Remember seeing a boy? He looked like a boy laid out in what you'd see on a picture tabloid, like this dramatic.
His arms out.
And he was absolutely, his face was, I won't say chalky white, but pale. He'd got no colour, but it showed that white. And it didn't dawn upon me till after that his appearance was due to the fact that he bled entirely, he emptied himself of blood. But it was laid out in a rather dramatic way, arms only quite a young boy. I remember that among so many dead, but that one remains in my mind. That was just before we left the trenches and to be relieved. And we marched out during the night, and I don't know how far we went, just couldn't have been very far back. There was transport there, because I remember there was some mules and things like that, but anyhow, in a field, in a little village, and whether we received any reinforcements, I don't know. But within a week, we were back. Within a week, we were back in the line.
What was the morale like after that first attack?
Well, as far as in our regiment, it wasn't too low. We hadn't suffered to that extent. It was an attack. Nobody likes attacks, because you know damn well you're going to your death. The odds are that it's 90, you've got a one chance in 100 of coming out, that's all. And you're lucky if you come out alive and unscathed. So the ordinary soldier does become a fatalist, and he has hardly any opinion, really, from my recollection. I don't, because I was very young, and we didn't exchange ideas of what we thought of this or what we thought of that. We didn't. We used the bloody staff sent us away, you know, and what the hell, and all that kind of thing. Only a vague recollection of that. So all I can say is that we came out, we may have got a few reinforcements, and we were back again within the 8 days. Now, we marched back, we'd taken Montauban, and the British had, and beyond Montauban, there was no village. There was a wood called Burnaby Wood, and beyond that, a distance of about 100 to 200 metres, was another wood called Troneswood, the Wood Trone, Troneswood. Anyhow, we were, perhaps half a kilometre from Burnaby Wood. We bivouacked out the night. And that morning, I do remember doing physical jerks. And the physical jerks, as far as we were concerned, the stretcher bearers, we had an MO. I've actually forgotten his real name, but we call, apart from number 9, we also called him Giraldo. Now Giraldo, in the Olympics just before the war, World War One, I think it was in Norway, he was an Italian. He was winning, he got to the last few yards of the marathon, Giraldo, and he was his compatriots, the Latins, were so excited, they grabbed hold of him and helped him along the last 10 or 20 metres, and he was disqualified. That was anyhow, we named the nickname, we called him Giraldo, because he was little, from my recollection, not very tall, I mean, and he used to take us for runs. That was our physical, he'd run, and that's why we called him Giraldo. Anyhow, I have a recollection of that, and then we formed up, the battalion formed up, the four companies, one behind the other. We didn't advance what was left of the trench, but in the open, marched up, and then to about 50 yards from the wood, we halted. The CO, in a loud voice, as though we were on the parade ground, this I do remember, he formed the companies side by side. And at that moment, something very peculiar. Of all things, coming out of that Burnaby Wood, a sergeant in khaki, an RAMC sergeant walked out. Now that to me, not then, I was too young to think, probably. I mean, I won't say it's too stupid, but it didn't. Just saw a sergeant come out. But with hindsight, what the devil was a sergeant doing there? An RAMC sergeant. in front of all the troops. I mean, there was nothing between us and the Cherries. Now, had he been in an infantry uniform, he could have been spotted at once, but in a RMC, he passed easy. And I've often thought, wondered whether that might have been a Jerry. Because they did used to come over, even when we were all in the trenches, an officer would come over. I've known an officer, a German officer, to come over, dressed as a British officer, collect a few men, and take them, they thought, on a fatigue job in no man's land, and wiring or something like that, and capture them. I've known that. And so, with hindsight, I think I've often wondered whether this chap was. Anyhow, a shell came over right where he was, and he was obliterated from my recollection. But to return to our CO, just with a movement of his hand, didn't, that was forward, and we went into the wood.
Can I, before you go on to, this seems a bit unwise to have the battalion formed up in that manner when the Germans.
We didn't know. There again, the only soul, we didn't know what I personally didn't. Now, whether the actual fighting men had received instructions, but we were formed up as though on parade on this occasion. And the order advanced was just a movement of the CO's hand. And so we advanced into the wood. We'd hardly got in. I think every German gun within range for all round just concentrated on us. And we couldn't get through to the other side. We were just, the wood had some trenches, and it also got one or two very deep dugouts, very deep dugouts, and big ones. Anyhow, we couldn't get through, obviously. We were pinned down, and I do remember lying down on the fringe of the wood. There was a kind of a road on the fringe of the wood, on the right-hand side, as you advanced, with my mate and I. And this, again, is what I do remember. Lots of what, it is all vague, my memories, but there are certain things one does remember. For instance, getting in that wounded that dead corporal. Now this, we were laid down there, and there was a terrific, the shells were dropping all round, but one literally, we stretched out in the side of this wood, dropped within inches of our feet. And it was a terrific sized shell. It just dropped there and slithered and stopped and didn't explode. Because had it done so, we'd have been just obliterated, blown to smithereens. But we didn't know whether it was likely to delayed action. We moved away from there pretty quick. But that is another thing that comes to the surface. Like, escapes like that. I mean, you're in danger all the time. As obviously, when you go on in the battle area, when you're in an attack, you can be killed at any second. But you remember things like, the only things like that you remember. So that happened. We were withdrawn. Anyhow, there was one in our company. I remember there was a big country chap, and I used to think, oh my God, I hope you're never wounded, chum, or if you are, you can walk. He was an immense fella, you know, and he was certainly head and shoulders more than me. Why I mention him now is this, that when we were withdrawn, the roll call, and he was missing, amongst the missing, because there's a roll call after, you see, when you're withdrawn from the actual fighting. Company officer calls the roll, see who's missing, and that's reported. The missing, of course, the wounded, of course, are accounted for by the from the MO, from the medical aid, and the missing, you know, whether they're killed or prisoner or what. That transpires later, whether they're prisoners or not. He was missing. Anyhow, he turned up, I don't know whether before we marched off or the next day, he turned up. He was in a real temper, calling us a lot of, I've forgotten what, but whilst we were pinned down, another battalion, it was the Wilts. I've told you that the brigade consisted of the two battalions of regulars, 2nd York, 2nd Wilts, Luftwaffe and Manchester. The Wilkes went through, and he, seeing that the troops going through, he got up from where he was and went through with them, went through the attack with the Wilkes, and came back to us. And he called us all kinds of names, but he got through it. I remember that. Whether he was eventually wounded or not, no, but I often used to think, oh my goodness, if he's wounded, we're going to have a hang of a job getting him. Even in the line, when out of attacks, when we were not all in the line to get him round communication trenches, he was a terrific size, you know, almost a giant. So anyhow, that was that. We were withdrawn from Trawnswood.
So you went into Burner Fay Wood. Did you actually get into Trawnswood yourself?
No, myself.
Were there any Germans in Burner Fay Wood?
No.
So you didn't really achieve much in this.
Well, we must have done. We must have achieved the objective, because I do recollect, again, I'm almost sure of what I'm saying, almost. We were inspected by the brigadier after, the battalion was, and congratulated. And we wondered what for. So the only conclusion one could arrive at, we'd been sent in there to draw. They didn't know whether Burner Fay Wood was still occupied by Jerry. To draw the fire, because the Wilkes went through and took it.
They took Trawnswood.
Trawnswood, yes.
So Burner Fay Wood was what you were hit by there was mainly artillery fire.
Artillery, yes.
What was it like? And can you remember now what it was like in one of those woods when the artillery started?
Well, it's pretty grim because, first of all, the trees were all stripped, but they were just trunks. But one a particularly heavy shell could probably unearth one, that could come down on top of you. It was pretty grim, really.
Did many of the men, or did you take shelter in these two? You mentioned two deep dugouts.
Yes, there was one. I went down. Ooh, it was so... I would say there was at least 20 steps, so you can see how deep that could be. And I remember going down there for a time, during the heat of the shelling, and then realising we can't stay down there, and then going up. And having gone up, went round the fringe. I don't know whether I collected anybody, I was taking him back. I did. Then we were laying on the fringe of the wood when this previous incident happened.
What was the German dugout like at the bottom? Having got down the 20 steps, what?
It looked a fairly big, clean... Of course, the mud walls, but there was a bank. It probably might have been stuff in it before the Jerry, when Jerry was down there, or whether it was just a shelter from the bombardment and things like that. Used as such, that Jerry would just sit on the floor, and there was at the side of the wall a kind of cut in, like of earth where I sat for a time. But there was nothing else, not to my recollection, there was nothing else except it was a big, spacious, like a cellar, only a big one, fairly big cellar. It had held easily 100 more men.
Did many of you shelter down there?
When I was down there, there was about a dozen of us, from what I recollect. We weren't crowded down, there was just, might have been half a dozen or a dozen.
Who was it who decided that you ought to go back up, because you'd be going back up into shellfire from
relatives?
Well,
and just your own idea, thinking we can't stay down here. And then again, it was my job to